Well, it would appear that the producer of this program has taken the day off and has decided not to assist us with someone to talk to. And so we are left to look at each other and chat amongst ourselves.
Or look in the mirror.
Well, it's McCowan, it's Shannon, and we have no guest today. Every once in a while we do this. Usually we do it because we are guestless, not because we have decided to do this.
We always do it because we're guestless.
Well, the reason we're guestless is because, the reason we're doing this is because we have no guest, not because we've decided we're not going to get a guest today. We just want to talk. Although I know you love to chat, Shannon. So,
oh yes, and I know that you're basically just a listener. That's what you are, Bob.
I that's
pure and
all.
Simple,
I am
a listener.
I'm a listener and a questioner. And I have no questions for you. So this Bob, is going to be a long hour. I can tell you that.
But hold on. Well, your social calendar right now, your social calendar should be full, because in the last 48 hours, your favorite hockey team is in town and some of your favorite people are in town. And haven't you had any, like, have you gone to have brunch with George? Have you gone down and had a coffee with George? Are you going to the game later tonight? What is going on?
I'm not doing any of those things. And he's referring to the Vegas Golden Knights.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised you're not wearing your favorite gold pullover.
I would wear it, John, if I knew where the hell it was. In the midst of this move, this endless renovation, I have clothes in boxes everywhere, but I have no knowledge of where things are. And weeks ago, I stopped looking.
So that's why you've worn the same Greg Norman thing for the last six shows?
No, I haven't. I just put this on today. Oh, I had a different one on yesterday, but it was also blue, I must admit. So that may be your conflict.
Yeah. But is clean. So you've had no contact with your favorite National Hockey League team?
No.
What is that?
Well, how long have they been here? They got here like a week ago Thursday,
Sunday
or something.
Yeah, they got here Sunday.
I wonder what they've been doing. I mean,
there's lots of guys. I believe there's a few enough guys from Ontario I know Pete DeBoer's mom and dad came to town, and George probably saw his family. They're from the Guelph area. But I'm sure that there's enough players that Alex Petrangelo's family is from the area. So I'm sure there's been a few family events. And remember, last year, they didn't travel to Canada. And B, even at times in the bubble, when the teams were in bubbles in Toronto and Edmonton, you weren't allowed to socialize.
Couldn't see anybody anyway.
So this is really within the hockey season, or the realm of a hockey season, that acquaintances have been remade with family members, let alone just friends.
So we're still early in the, obviously, in the regular season, but we do have two 500 teams playing each other. Yeah. Both of them disappointed, undoubtedly, with their record so far and their performance overall. It's a little early to say that this is any kind of game of any significance, but will we learn anything from this?
I don't think so. And maybe you'll learn less from Vegas. I mean, William Karlsson, Cowboy Bill, or whatever they call him in Vegas, is out. He broke a bone in his foot. So they're down, they're depleted. The Maple Leafs, I'm not sure what I make of the Maple Leafs, Bob.
I don't think anybody does.
Yeah, the display that they put on in Chicago after being down 2-0, did they come back and win? Yes. But it was a team in Chicago at that point that hadn't won a game. And the Maple Leafs made them look like equals, and there's absolutely no way that they should be considered an equal team at this point, I don't think.
Well, so, and then
I just don't know. And here's the other thing, last Saturday night, the Maple Leafs, you know, less than a million people, actually not Saturday, the previous Saturday, the game in Pittsburgh, which used to be, that would be a pretty good matchup on Hockey Night in Canada. Less than a million people watched the Maple Leafs play. And you wonder, and you're in this, you live in this market. What is the appetite of the hockey fan right now in Toronto?
I have
what
no
are they
clue.
Going
you,
through?
You'd have a better idea than I would. I mean, I think, I don't think you can go as long as Maple Leaf fans have. And it's not just 50 plus years. It's about the performance the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. The disappointments of first round exits, the promise at the beginning of every year that winds up in failure. I think that weighs on you and it weighs on your interest level. And I think even if you're a Maple Leaf fan, while you may enjoy every victory along the way, there's always that nagging thing in the back of your brain that this really doesn't matter very much. What matters is, can you get past the first round? And I don't know, do you hold a parade if this team gets to the playoffs and then gets past the first round but loses in the second? I mean, what gets rid of the stench of the past 3 or 4 years? And I don't know the answer to that question.
But winning the Stanley Cup gets rid
well,
of the
yes,
stench.
Yes, I acknowledge that. But is there something less than that that eliminates that
perhaps
feeling?
Getting to the Stanley Cup final? But it's a difficult one. And here's the fascination. I think there's an apathy in the market for the Maple Leafs. I really do. I feel there's an apathy. And a lot of it stems from what we've gone through with the pandemic and what's gone on. You know, people realize that they could actually live without going to Maple Leaf games. That, you know, that they don't need to be frustrated by it. But here's the fascination. And there are tickets available for the first time in a long period of time. There are tickets available. On the other hand, Bob, you have a difficult time getting a Raptor ticket. And here they have two franchises, the same company. If you looked on paper before both seasons started and said who has a better chance of going farther in
the
postseason,
there'd be no question. You'd say the Toronto.
You'd say the Maple Leafs. You'd say the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
And you'd say the Raptors are tight to make the playoffs. Period. You know, and
probably won't make the playoffs.
And they're in a bit of a rebuild, right? The Raptor fans are bananas right now. I can tell you this from a fact that, you know, in talking to people at MLSE, that the demand for Raptors versus the demand for Maple Leafs is tremendously different. And they have it there right now. The Raptors are by far a more popular franchise in the market.
Everything you've said is accurate. Here's what I will say. The overlap between Raptor fans and Leaf fans. In other words,
20%.
Yeah, max.
Yeah.
There are Blue Jay fans who are Leaf fans, Blue Jay fans who are Raptor fans. There may even be TFC fans that are fans of something else. Who knows?
And there could be 6 Argo fans in there somewhere.
Well, who are all fans of something else, as a general rule, as evidenced by the fact that they don't go to games. But there is a divide between hockey and basketball.
Oh, totally.
The longtime hockey fan actually views, the Maple Leaf fan, actually views the Toronto Raptors as competition. They don't view them as another team in the market that they live in or that they root for.
Do you think so now?
Oh, I do.
Do you think so now?
I absolutely do. I still think they view them as competition.
I would have viewed that, I still remember. Now, full disclosure, I worked for both the NHL and I worked for MLSE. And I would tell you that within the hockey groups, even the people around the team, whether it be players, agents, people that earn their livings in the hockey world, 15 years ago, I think that was true. That
it was undeniably true.
There was a jealousy. There was a how can we be How can we be that hip and edgy, if those are words that you still use in 2021? At that point, the Raptors were hot and the Leafs were not, as far as the culture goes. I thought that changed, though. I thought that changed.
I haven't seen it. Now,
when you had Brendan and Masai, you had the twin towers of Brendan and Masai run the organization and work together and work closely together and created a symbiotic relationship between the two franchises. I thought that had changed. Now, you may be right, though.
I don't think so. We used to sit almost every day, you and I, on a little couch in a room at Sportsnet.
That was our office. That was our office. Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't give us an office. So there was a couch that came from somebody's office that nobody was using. And it sat in the corner of the general production area. And so that's where Shanny and I would sit, put our feet up on the coffee table and read magazines and yammer about things. And I can tell you that the hockey puck mentality, which pervaded Sportsnet. I mean, most of the people that worked there were hockey fans, almost all of them. Their disdain for the Raptors was tangible. They viewed the Raptors as some sort of threat, that hockey was their game and their religion. And here came this other religion and they were afraid that it was going to take over. And I haven't been at Sportsnet for a couple of years, but I don't believe it's changed in any way, shape, or form. So,
I think it's an age thing. I think that the older you, if you're 40 plus, you're with the Maple Leafs, and if you're below 40, you're with the Raptors.
As a general rule, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah. But I think it was reflected always in the way Sportsnet conducted their business too.
I will tell you one story, and this goes back a long time, and where most of our viewers probably weren't born. But, in when I ran Hockey Night in Canada in the 90s, and the Raptors came to town, it scared the bejesus out of me. As someone who is I'm a basketball fan. I love basketball.
Oh, I know, but you made your living doing hockey.
But I made my living with hockey. And I will tell you that the moment, and Raptor fans are going to be mad at me, but the moment Vince Carter missed that shot in Game 7 in Philadelphia in the playoffs to get through, not to advance to the next round, the cheer in my house was as loud as it's ever been.
No.
Because you did not want to see the Raptors, and because the Leafs weren't very good. And you did not want to see the Raptors get measured in the ratings to be ahead of hockey at some point. You did not. And this was at a time when the Maple Leafs were struggling. Ratings at Hockey Night were struggling because the Maple Leafs were struggling. And that game did not get a million. It got about 980,000. And I was scared, Bob. I was scared for the future. I was scared for the future of hockey on television versus basketball on television, and therefore the two franchises. And what happened in the subsequent years was the Raptors went south, and the Leafs, Pat Quinn turned the tide on the Maple Leafs, and the Maple Leafs became a factor again, and life was good again in the hockey world. That was late 90s, early 2000s. But that was true. I don't see that now. I just see two different teams, and there seems to be fans of everybody. But it's interesting to note that I think right now there's an apathy for the Maple Leaf fans, and there is an absolute demand of Raptor fans, which is fascinating to watch.
We have other things to discuss. We'll take the break and come back. Gary Bettman had a presser yesterday, and the reaction to it was not good for the commissioner. We'll address that when we come back after these messages. So the Kyle Beach story continues to effectively dominate the headlines, and justifiably so.
Yep.
And Gary Bettman held his first public news conference, seated beside Bill Daley, the deputy commissioner, with regard to the things that have happened, the decisions that he has made. And the consensus, even on a Sportsnet, where who are a rights holder, was that Gary did not do a particularly good job during his conversation yesterday. Mm-hmm. Do you agree?
It was not his best moment. And I think for a multitude of reasons. I don't think the whole Zoom format helped Gary. I don't know who set up the room for him. I think the look of it was less than perfect. I mean, it's simple little things, Bob, optically, how he would go on the air not wearing a jacket, Bill not wearing a jacket. And I know what Gary's thinking is, I've got to be informal, I've got to be relaxed. This is not a relaxed, informal topic.
Would you have been more comfortable if he was in a traditional setting, like with the NHL logo behind him?
Absolutely. In this, for this one,
on a podium.
For this one, absolutely.
Yeah.
This needed to look official. I mean, even Gary's posture, reeked of something that was far from authoritarian. And I just think he opened himself up to criticism early because of the presentation. And then at a certain point, and as you know, I mean, my relationship with him is, I think it's good. I think it's, we do have a relationship, he's not, there's lots of people that can come across as sympathetic, empathetic. That's not one of Gary's strengths.
No,
that isn't one of Gary's strengths. And I think they had to find a way to manage that. And the other thing is, the reality of it is there was lots of people on the call that were looking for blood. They were looking for blood. And the moment you look to Gary to be that accountable, Gary does get his backup. And then what you get is you get the lawyer. And that's why I think there's a lot of outcry in the last 24 hours that it was not as open as it was. The other issue, Bob, for me was, and this was a strange one, and I haven't talked to anybody at the league yet about it, was they should have allowed Rick Westhead to ask more questions early, or at least a question early. They did ask Katie Strang from The Athletic, who has been on the story. She was the number two questioner on the call. But to not acknowledge, whether you like him or not, to not acknowledge Rick Westhead, who has been, from a Canadian media perspective, the driver of this story. It was more than 40 minutes before Rick got to ask a question. And that's not right.
Wonders if that was deliberate or.
Well, they're going to say, well, you know, we have to look after the people that are in the Professional Hockey Writers Association first. Westhead is not a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. There are lots of ways that it's going to be spun. But the bottom line is, and you've been to enough press conferences, you know enough people that run press conferences, they make sure that the key constituents get acknowledged early in a press conference, if not first. And Rick was certainly not acknowledged early or first.
Okay, two things that were deemed controversial that may or may not have been properly addressed by the commissioner. Number one, the fine to the Chicago Blackhawks as of this date is $2 million. Mm-hmm. The franchise is worth $1 billion. there were those who said that that is a slap on the wrist and pointed to the fact that Gary Bettman works for the owners and that the fine, the punishment to the team should have been much more severe than it was. How do you feel about that?
I mean, $2 million is a lot of money still. But if it was $5 million, if it
not
was
in
five
a, not
or
in
10,
an era where 80% of the players are making more than $2 million in a year,
players can only get fined $5,000.
Well, I get it, but also a franchise that's worth over $1 billion.
Yeah. So would everybody be happier if they were fined $10 million? Would that be, because in the end, what's the difference between $2 million and $10 million to the Wurtzes?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but the optics of it were slap on the wrist.
Yeah.
Well, and not the other not thing, a level of responsibility, but
yeah.
We have to find them something. We have to give them some kind of punishment. Well, we'll find them $2 million.
Yeah. It could have been more. Sure, it could have been more. A lot of people were saying, well, you know, take draft picks away from them, punish them with draft picks.
Well, sure.
Well, but here's the one thing I would suppose is that, you know, when there's already been a work in place that, you know, the general manager's been dismissed because of this. Another senior manager's been dismissed because of this. There's going to be a new manager coming soon. I'm just asking the question, does the new manager need to be penalized in doing his job for what happened 11 years ago?
No, but the organization needs to. You have to acknowledge that this was an organizational failure. Oh, yeah. It wasn't just the failure of a bunch of individuals like Bowman, like Quenneville, who have already lost their jobs and may never get jobs again as a result. That's right. A pretty serious punishment. And I'm not saying it's not worthy, but that's pretty severe. And yet the team that is responsible for all of this and the ownership that was responsible for all of this gets a $2 million fine.
But what's going to happen too is that, you know, and I believe the discussions either start today or tomorrow with at least two civil suits. You know, the Blackhawks are going to have to pay probably close to $50 million.
That is an entirely separate issue. This is something that's under the control of the National Hockey League. Let me put it to you this way. What do you think Bowman was making as general manager of the Blackhawks?
$2 million.
Okay. There's no reason to believe he was on his way out the door. So he's going to lose $2 million a year. Forget his job. Going to lose $2 million a year for I don't know how many years. Joel Quenneville was making, what, $5 million a year?
A bit more, yeah.
All right. And he had multiple years on his contract, probably could have coached for another 5 years, $25 million. How is it that the coach and general manager of the Chicago Blackhawks, in relative terms,
sure,
get that kind of punishment, but the team gets significantly less than them? So what?
So it's a fine of ignorance, because I mean, do you believe that Rocky and the Wirtz family knew of this going on?
I don't know. I don't have any way to know. The point of the matter is not that. The point of the matter is you own the team. You hired these people. You are responsible for the actions of your company and the people under you. It is that way in every industry in the world. And yes, maybe they will, I mean, almost undoudedly, they will have to
pay for a civil suit.
They're
going to pay for it. They're going to pay for it in so many ways, Bob. They should pay for it in the civil suits. They're going to pay for it.
The National Hockey League.
They're going to pay for it in season ticket holders. They're going to pay for it multiple different ways.
But the perception is bad for Gary Bettman, because he works for the owners, and he opened the door to the belief, whether true or not, that he gave Wirtz a slap on the wrist rather than a serious, he didn't take it seriously enough. So that's one issue. The second issue is Sheveldayoff, who we both know and we both like. And there are those that believe, and I think you might agree, that they were surprised, you were surprised, as
I
was surprised, that he got off scot-free.
I was shocked, I must admit.
And was that the right call?
Well, either that or there's something that we're missing. Because the whole concept of
I don't see how, John, because Gary had the opportunity to state whatever the case was.
Yeah,
and he just generically said, well, he wasn't in a position of authority.
Yeah, and I just, that part does bother me. That part, I must admit, bothers me. And I that's what I said. I haven't read the transcript of Kevin's interview with the law firm in Chicago. I don't think we'll ever be able to. I wasn't privy to the meeting between Cheveldayoff and Mark Chipman and the commissioner. Did something happen? Did something occur in this meeting for Gary to say, okay, you're off scot-free? Now, the court of public opinion is going to ensure that Kevin isn't off scot-free. But at the same time, I am shocked that it happened that quickly, that it disappeared. To me, now, we should, full disclosure, we're taping this before Kevin speaks to the media in Winnipeg on Tuesday.
Right.
And Mark Chipman is going to speak there as well. So it will be interesting to see what both sides, what those two people think of what went on and what of the punishment and what angst Kevin has gone through since his name has been brought up.
Well, and again, we both, I think, have a hard time with this because we Kevin's been on this program and, you know,
Kevin's Kevin's a good person. But he screwed up.
Well, exactly. And whether it's optically or otherwise, if they had given Kevin Cheveldayoff a 20-game suspension, which means he wouldn't be around the team and he wouldn't get paid for 20 years, would that have been, at least it's something. But it's probably not tangible.
I was thinking of when this was up and people were asking me, what do you think Kevin's going to get? Is he going to get fired? I said, well, no, but I was actually thinking of the Houston Astros. The cheating scandal.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of one guy who wasn't with the organization anymore, but still got suspended for a year. And that was Alex Cora. And Alex Cora, who was already managing the Red Sox by the time all the stories came out and the investigation took place, was suspended for a year and came back to the organization and managed the Red Sox to the American League Championship. I figured in my own little mind, I figured that that's probably what we might see with Kevin Cheveldayoff, that Kevin would be suspended for the remainder of the season and be reinstated on, you know, the moment the Jets eliminated from the playoffs or the regular season.
Not unreasonable.
And that to me made sense. That to me made some sense of what went on. And listen, I guess there's nothing to suggest that it can't happen, but I would think that Gary, you know, I also know Gary well enough. Once he's made a public decree, it is a public decree. So I don't think we'll see anything more from the league on Cheveldayoff.
The other thing that I think is important to point out here, and correct me if I'm wrong, the two most significant punishments here were to Bowman and to Quenneville. Bowman resigned, yes or no?
Effect. They were both given the same option to resign. You know, I don't. Is that semantics? You know, when
it's
both
entirely both, semantics. It is yeah, done.
They were dismissed. They were dismissed.
They both had to fall on their swords. They both had no option other than to leave.
Well, as Gary said, you know, in his press release about Joel, is that Joel has chosen to resign, and we fully endorse that. So, That was, you know.
Well, look at, you know, we've seen this go on in you know, in the media, you know, that you and I have been involved with for most of our lives. This is the way corporations tend to do things now.
Yeah.
And they do it. They'll tell you they do it.
Do you think it softens the blow?
Hell no.
I don't think so. No.
It doesn't soften the blow in any way, shape, or form.
No. Not, I mean, to me, it's no different than Joel Quenneville is no longer the coach of the Florida Panthers. We will not comment any further.
You know, if you ask Sportsnet about, you know, why I was terminated, and I was, the, you know, the public pronouncement was that I was retiring.
It was mutual.
Mutually agreed, which it was not. And that they bought out my contract, which they did. Mm-hmm. But that was their decision. It was not my decision. I was not given a say in it. And yet this is the way corporations deal with this kind of nonsense, because it makes them, they think it makes them look better.
I suppose. Yeah. Well, no,
I object. I think if I was Gary Bettman, I think he should have stood up and said, if he believed that Bowman was responsible, which he was.
Yeah.
And he should have stood up and said, he's no longer a member of the National Hockey League family. And he should have said the same thing about Quenneville, and instead of soft pedaling all of this and allowing them to retire.
So the interesting thing is that Bowman did not have a meeting at all with Gary. That was strictly the Blackhawks managing it. The Blackhawks
same thing
allowed Stan, but here's it, the Stan Bowman one's an interesting one, because I think Stan fell on half his sword. Here's why. The whole report comes out. Stan is obviously complicit. But there is a sympathy for, hear me out. There is a sympathy in the Blackhawk world for Stan Bowman. And there's a loyalty to him for what
he's. Why wouldn't there be?
Right. And for the loyalty of winning 3 Stanley Cups and the Wirtz name getting him back on the cup.
I get it. It doesn't mean anything, but I understand it. Yeah.
Right. Loyalty is an interesting word through all this. And so what happens is that Stan points the finger right at John McDonough, who is the president and CEO of the club at the time, and was summarily dismissed about 18 months ago.
Yeah.
Was summarily dismissed. And so Bowman says, well, you know, what's going to happen? And they say, listen, we'll let you resign, but we're going to allow you to do a press release on Blackhawk letterhead. On Blackhawk letterhead, as long as you say it's John McDonough's fault. And that's what happened. That's what happened. So Stan fell on his sword a little bit, but not as much as, you know, pushing John McDonough back on the sword too. Now, I'm not suggesting that John McDonough was blameless. He certainly wasn't. There's a lot to blame for John McDonough. But in the end, Stan kind of, he put himself in a position of saying, well, you know what? I made a mistake, but I'm not alone in making mistakes, and it's his fault too. And the Blackhawks let him do that. And the other thing is, and this you know, if after the show, well, we got nowhere to go, Bob. We got another 25 minutes to do.
Well, no, we have to take another break here, John.
Let me finish. When Gary listens to this show, Gary's going to phone you and say, Bob, it's Gary. Let me tell you that all these people that want to come back into the National Hockey League have to talk to me first, and I will decide whether they're going to be back.
Well, we already know that. That goes without saying.
But that's going to be, you know, that's like the Marty McSorley thing when he got suspended for the rest of the season and needed to come back. Marty McSorley has never been back in the game. It has been a lifetime ban. So there's going to be lots of ways that people are going to, you know, to massage this in order to make themselves and to justify what has gone on and how it's been managed.
All right. There's another side to this coin here, and it is unfolding as we speak, and we don't know where it's going to go. We'll address that when we come back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon on the podcast and radio program today. No guest. And the topic of conversation currently, the Bettman press conference of yesterday and the whole Kyle Beach situation.
And if you're just joining us, Gary could have handled it better. And his people could have handled it better. That's
true. Almost no doubt about it. And I think that is, we are not unique in taking this position. As I said earlier, almost everybody that has talked or written about it has the same opinion. But there is another potential shoe to drop, and that is with the Players Association. And what is the future of Don Fehr as a result of this situation from 11 years ago? Don Fehr says that he has initiated or will initiate an independent investigation into this. Give me your take on that. Is an independent investigation even necessary here? Or do we have enough information to make determinations as to who should be held at least partly responsible for what took place 11 years ago?
Well, my first thought as soon as that was announced was that this is a mirror image of what the Blackhawks and the league did. They put they said, listen, in order to stem the tide for a bit, let's have an independent investigator look at it. That's what happened. Remember, we had Gary on in the summertime, Bob, and we asked him directly about the Chicago scandal. And he said, can't talk, independent investigator. So this is what the Players Association, and this is what Don has done, is said, we're going to have the independent investigator look at it, and we'll report back to the executive and to the player reps. But the reality is, I think, with everything that Kyle Beach has said, and I assume that Kyle Beach will be interviewed again and his agent will be interviewed again, and the people at the Players Association will be interviewed again, we're going to come up with the same thing, is that there was some negligence and some ignorance within the Players Association in how they managed their side of the Kyle Beach situation.
Do you believe that the PA knew?
Well, the PA did know. The PA did know.
Well, they knew based on Kyle Beach's testimony or things that what he said, correct?
And within what happened, whether it was Kyle Beach directly to the Players Association or the regional rep for the Players Association, and through Dr. Brian Shaw, who's in a complex situation with the NHL/NHLPA substance abuse program, which is highly confidential, as we've learned through the Carey Price situation, that we don't really know what's going on, is does this become something that has to be addressed within how players manage each other? There's quite frankly, there's enough evidence, I think, within the investigation to say this, the Players Association were contacted twice about this, and it went nowhere at that point. And that's tremendously disheartening.
Yeah. One of the dilemmas that I always have with unions or players associations, and there's a great similarity between the two. I think it's really semantics, the difference in the two wordings, but they are not shy about defending their constituents when the other side of the table is management, owners, coaches, anybody outside of that union or association. The minute it is one player against another player, they seem lost. They seem unable to determine how to deal with that. Even in the case of like wild stick swinging situations where one player gets hurt and the other player is clearly responsible, they will defend the accused.
Yeah. There's a difference between the victim and the accused, isn't there?
Well, there is.
Because the Players Association will view the player that's being penalized as the victim.
As the victim. Correct. Yeah. Even if the victim is another player.
Right.
So this is the constant dilemma. And we were talking about the National Hockey League, but I think it applies to essentially all players' sure associations. It's a dilemma that is, there's no answer for it.
No, but this is different.
But this is different. Yeah. This is different because this is now a player or former player who was or was not technically a member of the Players Association.
That's a great question. But the fact that he was on a National Hockey League team
roster
of extras, did not make it into a regular season or a playoff game. People will argue that because he's a member, he played for the Rockford IceHogs, he's not a member of the NHL Players Association. But the fact that he was training during the playoffs with the Blackhawk extras, that he should have been considered part of the NHLPA for that period of time. But he wasn't, you know, he's not getting salary. You know, you wonder, is he paying dues? You know, all of this stuff, the reality is that he should have been considered a member of the NHL Players Association in that period of time.
Can you use that as the argument for why the PA did nothing? That he wasn't a member of the association, therefore it was not our responsibility.
I think someone will. And I suspect someone will say that within the realm of this investigation, if the investigation is truly transparent.
Part two of what I want to say is, and it relates back to what I was saying before, that when you put two athletes in an association opposite each other, the Players Association essentially defends the guy that is the accuser, principally because he is the one who faces some league punishment. And the league is really the enemy in all situations for the PA. This, however, the Beach situation was not Beach versus another player. It was Beach versus a coach.
That's right.
That scenario, the PA should or would have defended Beach to the nth.
Yes.
Unless they did not consider Beach a member of the Players Association.
Right. The other thing that isn't part of what the PA goes through here, because I think we have to get back to that and who are we going to point fingers at within the Players Association, is the culture of a hockey dressing room. You know, lots of players knew about this. No one will admit it, but lots of players knew about this to the point where at the following training camp, Kyle Beach was being teased on the ice that his boyfriend had been dismissed. Is he going to miss his boyfriend? That being Brad Aldrich. This is fraternity stuff.
But that's hockey. Hockey is
hockey.
Its foundation is fraternity.
With all sports similar, but that becomes
than others, I think.
You're probably right. That becomes a real concern in moving forward for the role of the players in all this. The role of the players in all this, not a PA thing, but, you know, what responsibility do the players have to each other in all of this? And that's something that we don't like. We talk about authority. Even Gary in his press conference acknowledged that, you know, because the assistant video coach was in a level of authority, then it was victimization. Had to be considered that. But when you talk about professional athletes all being on the same level and being equal, what responsibility do they have for each other? And at what point do you stop being kids and start being adults? At what point? Now, this is 2021. Being an adult right now does not really stand much stead. But at what point do you start looking in the mirror and saying, I helped this fester? And that's on the players too. And I wonder, can that be part of this investigation? I'm not sure it can, but I wonder. I really do wonder.
And we should point out that there are a relative handful of players still in the National Hockey League today.
Well, here's the interesting thing. Duncan Keith, after the Oilers game last night, admitted that he declined to be interviewed for the investigation. Now, he said it was the day after he was traded and his mind was blurring, but he had nothing else to offer. And you know, at this point, I can't tell you that what I have to trust Duncan Keith or what he said. But you know, and I know we have been around enough dressing rooms, hockey players, athletes gossip like old women. They gossip like old women. They tease like old women. And at some point it crosses a line. And in this time, Bob, it crossed the line. It crossed the line. And the players are responsible for this, for some of this, not all of it.
Well, I think there's great truth in what you say. And yet, at the end of the day, as I said, most of the players have retired.
Yep.
There's nothing you can really do to harm them or to punish them. Not that you would, but you don't even have that option. And the issue right now is Don Fehr going to survive this? Is the head of the Players Association going to be held accountable, maybe even by the players, today's players, for this?
Well, let me throw it out. Here's what's going to happen. First of all, Don Fehr should not be the only one held accountable, because there are other people that were around him that I'm sure were aware of it, like Matthew Snyder. Because Matthew Snyder and Don Fehr are in lockstep 100% of the time. So, my opinion will be that Don Fehr they've bought themselves some time with this investigation, and Don Fehr will be allowed at some point in the next 6 months to move on.
Sure. To resign.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what's going to happen. Because it was, I actually thought, and you and I had Don on a little while ago, we actually thought Don was going to resign last summer. And we asked him, are you looking for a replacement? So I think this might have accelerated it a bit. This has probably put a spotlight on it a bit, but you know, I think that Don Fehr's time at the union was coming to an end anyway. So.
All right, one more break and we'll come back and wrap this up. It's McCowan, it's Shannon. We'll be back after these. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you on the podcast and on Sirius XM.
Now, full disclosure, everybody.
Yeah.
Before we started taping today, Bob said, I don't think we have enough for a whole show. We haven't even got to six.
I didn't really
topics.
Say that.
You kind of did.
Well, I do that all the time.
I know.
Give me 10 topics. I'll get to two.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
If indeed Don Fehr falls on his sword or is executed.
Yep. No, he won't. No, he won't be executed.
Well, you can say he won't. I just said, no matter what happens, I agree with you that Don Fehr's days of running the NHL Players Association are about to come to an end. And it won't be of his choice. He may say it's of his choice, but it won't be of his choice. It will be as a result of this situation. Is there an obvious successor to Don Fehr? And I think I know the answer to that. But
I think there are two names that will be and should be discussed. Mike Gillis, who is the former general manager of the Vancouver Canucks, is actually working as a consultant for the Players Association, is a lawyer by trade, a former player in the National Hockey League, outspoken, stubborn, opinionated. certainly has a different thought process than most people in the game. I think he will get some consideration. And I truly believe Glenn Healy will be a name that his name will resurface, if it hasn't already, as someone who can manage what the Players Association needs and create a better working relationship with the NHL.
Well, and therein lies my next question, and that is, which of the two approaches would be better? The obvious answer, I think, is Gillis, because, as you said, he is he has a legal background as a former player, as Healy is, and his approach would probably be far more confrontational than Glenn's. But is that the right answer?
Well, it doesn't matter. You have basically labor peace for the next 5 to 6 years, Bob. So what you need to do is you need to push the envelope in certain different ways. Here's the answer I'd like to give you. I'd hire both of them. Yeah, I'd bring both of them in.
Well, one of them's got to be the senior. You can't have, well, you know.
Well, you can't, I think, have we twins. Can figure that out. I think we'd figure it out. Healy went as the number two last time for Paul Kelly. So.
Yeah, I do know that. I can't argue the suggestion. I just think it seems somewhat unlikely. In any event, we will see how things play out, and it may take several weeks for us to get the answers to the questions that remain. Or
Brian Burke tomorrow, by the way. Brian Burke tomorrow.
Whose hockey team got off to a great start and has been fluttering since.
Yeah, and I think you'll have an opinion on Gary, too.
We thank you for watching or listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.